Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Acey. I'm a Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. My boss, Jay Posner, is with me. He's the sports editor at the UT. I am in Arizona, Peoria, Arizona, and Jay is in San Diego. Jay, it's my third workout today. It's beautiful out here. I'm back in my hotel room. I have lots to write. Let's get right to it. I posted a little bit ago that the Padres just completed a record week of season ticket sales. Since Fernando Tatis Jr.'s deal for 14 years and $340 million was announced, they have sold $2 million in season tickets.
So
pretty impressive.
$338 million to go?
Well, you got to think that all those people got to park, that all those people are going to buy concessions. They're going to buy merchandise, which, of course, they have to share the merchandise money. But, yes, certainly it takes more than 1 year. It's going to take a lot of years, and they're going to have to win. But a really good start for the Padres. I thought that would be a nice way to sort of get into the big news and the things that we want to talk about with Fernando Tatis Jr. What's on your mind? When I say Fernando Tatis Jr. got a 14-year contract, Jay, what's on your mind?
I think it's a situation where it's sort of a risk for both people, but probably a little more risk for the Padres because they're the ones who have to pay the money no matter what. I think Tatis probably, you could argue he left money on the table, but my point whenever something like this happens is this guy has set himself up now for, and his kids and their kids and everybody else, that if he doesn't do anything stupid and he doesn't, and everything turns out okay, this guy has set up all those people, his family, for life. So if he missed out, if he misses out in 10 years that he could have made $46 million instead of $36 million or whatever it is, I don't think it's going to matter all that much to him. You know, there comes a point where it's sort of like, how much do you really need? And if he can guarantee himself, and again, he doesn't get to keep $340 million. You know, there's taxes involved, there's agents, there's all kinds of people like that. But he has set himself up for life now, no matter what happens. And so the Padres, but the Padres, I think, made a good deal as well. They wanted to get him locked up. I think they got very fair prices, probably under market, certainly during the arbitration years. If he goes to arbitration in those years, he's going to get more money than, you know, 5, 7, and 11 million. And if he goes out on the free agent market, he's going to, it probably would cost them more than $306 million or whatever it broke down to over those 10 years. So I think both sides have reason to be very happy with the deal. But as I said, I do believe the Padres, as happens in these cases, are a little bit more at risk. And again, there will be some sort of insurance policy that goes into play here for them. But again, the Padres, as they showed this week or in the last week, and they and will continue to show as long as they keep winning, there are ways to make that money back. I don't think anybody's going to be starting up a GoFundMe page for Peter Seidler and his partners on this deal.
Yeah, you, like you say, you talk about leaving money on the table, and it's valid. I could make the argument he left $120, $150 million potentially on the table.
Potentially,
potentially, you could stop there because that's the big word, right? Potential. But that money's, there's also $340 million on the table. He may have left some off, but he has some on the table that he might never have saw if there was a catastrophic injury or if his performance went down, which I don't think anyone thinks it's going to go down terribly. But he could have made $60 million from 2022 to 2024 in arbitration. He could have started making $40 million right away in 2025 when he's going to be making $20 for 2 years, and then it goes up to $25. But there's a new CBA coming up. I think I'm told TV contracts are going to keep rising, but I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. And this guy has more money guaranteed through 2034 than any player walking around right now, except Mike Trout and Mookie Betts. So, right. And here's the other thing for both him and the Padres. He'll be 35 when this deal is done. Betts and Trout will be 39 when their respective deals are done. The only two guys that are going to make more over the life of their deal on 12-year deals that they both signed, well, last year and the year before. I mean, this might not be the end for Fernando Tatis Jr. Certainly, I would agree with you. I was hoping we were going to disagree when we put this topic on the table, but certainly the risk is much greater for the Padres. Now, addressing that risk, look, every indicator that's out there. And all you have to do is, if you never watched Fernando Tatis Jr. play a game, if you watched that press conference and saw the personality and the way that he was talked about and the way that he talked that showed his character, this isn't a guy who's going to be any different of a player this year or next or the year after, because now he's got guaranteed money. Right. So it's all about whether he continues to be at this level where it's basically historic in terms of how he started off of his career and whether he stays healthy.
Right. And that's why I don't blame him for jumping at the deal. Absolutely. Because you don't know if he's going to stay healthy. Boy, we sure hope so. But, you know, we saw in LA yesterday how fast things can change for people. And, you know, one moment in time, and a lot of things in life can be different. So you have a chance to get $340 million. It might be a pretty good idea to take it while you can get it. Kevin, maybe someday we'll get around to offering you a contract. I'm going to guess it's not going to have that many zeros, but if we give you a chance, you probably want, you know, somebody gave you a chance to sign for a pretty good amount of money. I think you'd probably jump at it. Even if you thought, boy, maybe 10 years down the line, I might be able to make more. I think Fernando did pretty well here for himself and for his family.
And, you know, there was time to do this, obviously, but this was the right time before the arbitration years. Because, you know, at that point, it's like, well, it just keeps getting more expensive all the time. But I really think a factor, Fernando Tatis Jr. wanted to be a Padre. Mm-hmm. And he's very close with Manny. They share the same agent. They're very close. You remember when Mike Trout signed his deal and people were a little surprised that he'd signed it. He didn't go to free agency, especially with how the Angels sort of let him down around him and all that. And he talked about talking to Bryce Harper, talking to Manny Machado. And the free agent process kind of sucks for these guys.
Yeah.
And Fernando Tatis Jr. ostensibly never has to deal with that. And that is a big deal, I think.
Yeah, no, and I think the idea that he obviously feels comfortable here with ownership, with A.J. Preller and the front office, with people in the clubhouse. I mean, look, people in the clubhouse could change at any moment, but the city is going to be here. He's got to know how much the fan base is excited about all of this. And look, you know, there's something to be said for being comfortable in a place and wanting to stay in a place. And it's not all about, you know, how much money can I get? Sometimes there's other factors that are involved, and he obviously weighed some of those in this situation. And look, this is a great thing for the Padres, for their fans. An idea, you know, I've never quite understood the whole idea about caring what other people think of you, but a lot of fans seem to care about what national people think of the Padres. National people right now think a lot of the Padres. You know, they're being held up as sort of this model organization in a way that's trying to win when a lot of other teams aren't trying to win. And that's something very new for the Padres and for San Diego. And I just hope that the fans are allowed back in, you know, even if it's 10 or 12,000 to start the season with, and eventually there'll be full houses back at Petco. And I just think the atmosphere, I'm really looking forward to fans getting a chance and going out there and watching a team that, you know, by all indications should be very good this year, very exciting, a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, it sets up for a lot of fun days and nights downtown.
Yeah. A little note on that is that, while it will be a reduced capacity, maybe even like, you know, less than the whole, maybe 20% at the start, it might go up to 25%. The Padres do believe that there will be enough people that opt out and decide that they're going to put their season tickets on hold for the next year when they feel it's safer, or whatever their personal decision is, that if you have season tickets, that you will be able to attend games this year. They don't think that, obviously you could go through the secondary market if you don't have season tickets, but the, right, that's all that's going to make it is season ticket holders this year, unless you want to pay probably a very inflated price considering demand on the secondary market, but that everyone who has season tickets, maybe not 81 games if you have a full season ticket package, but you will be able to attend games this year, which I think is significant. They had not been able to say that before, but obviously with the passage of time, it becomes more clear what, you know, their ticket holders' plans are and what their plans are.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just talking to my wife about it. Like, how many games do you think we'll get to go to with a half a season package like we have? And the answer is, I have no idea. I haven't asked you about it. I haven't seen anything from the Padres about it in terms of whether the 81 game people will get to go to all the games and then it goes from there, or if there's going to be percentages. So I'm sure the Padres have worked on this plan for a long time, and I'm eager to see when they do get the go ahead, what it's going to look like and who gets to go to games and that sort of thing. But I just think, you know, even having been at a few games last year in the press box, I just think it's such a good time for Padre fans that it would really be a shame if it goes on much longer where they can't come and watch the team that they've suffered through for so long.
You know, I don't want to be heretical here, but it might come as a shock to some of you that sometimes that what an athlete says, just like, you know, all of us, they don't really mean it. But I believe wholeheartedly that these guys are looking forward to fans being back in the stands. They know they're good. They know they're exciting. And they know what Petco can be like, and even some visiting venues. But they know what it is like when the fans are there, when they're good. And as you and I would talk some nights, Saturday nights last year, if Tatis went yard, we'd be like, man, this place would be going off. And I believe that those players really do miss it, and they're looking forward to it.
And I think the other thing they miss is on the road. I know that players have talked about this in different sports. I remember, especially in the NBA, hearing an arena go quiet where you're on the road and somebody hits a big shot or somebody hits a big home run in the case of baseball, and it just goes quiet because all the fans are so devastated. There's great satisfaction that I think that the players take in that, just like they enjoy playing at home and hearing the roars when they do well.
Relievers feed off it, both at home, because generally if you're going to come in, and especially if you're a late inning guy, the place is going wild. And if you're on the road, they came to miss the abuse and the people yelling at them, because it just getting your adrenaline up is such a huge thing, especially if you're a reliever and you got to come in and be firing right away. So they're really looking forward to it. Jay, I wanted to talk about one more thing from the Tatis deal. And before we move on to a couple other things, pitching, AJ Preller, I think that he deserves an immense amount of credit. And I think that that's pretty obvious, but clear in that press conference, and those of us have been around the team and who talked to players and others knew it, but man, was it on display, the relationship between and the trust and the enjoyment of each other between Fernando Tatis Jr. and AJ Preller. And I've written about it and talked about it before, that these guys love him. He doesn't insert himself in the clubhouse. As a matter of fact, before last year, he was rarely on the road because, quite honestly, he didn't care about the major league team because he knew how much work he had to do to make it better. He was in Korea or, you know, the Dominican Republic or at minor league ballpark. But when he's around, he's a compelling figure. He's sneaky funny. And the relationship, and obviously money speaks, okay, but the relationships that he's built with these players is big.
Yeah, and I think that paid off, especially with Tatis, who's been around for a couple of years. It's a little different when people come in as free agents, you know, guys like Hosmer and Machado and the guys that are acquired, whether it be a trade or free agent from other teams. But when someone like Tatis sort of grew up in the organization, I know he wasn't drafted, but all that. But still, here's a guy who traded for him and believed in him all along. And it's clear that he's comfortable with him and comfortable with ownership and everything else.
And look, at spring training today, I saw AJ Preller talking with Mackenzie Gore for a long time. I don't know what they were talking about. I know they were talking about pitching by a little bit of the hand motions that I saw and all that. But it's a really easy conversation. And Mackenzie Gore is a guy that they still hold Mackenzie Gore, just so everybody knows, at the same level, basically, they hold Tatis. They think that's how good Mackenzie Gore is going to be. But Mackenzie Gore had a kind of a rough year last year, right? Didn't get to play, has had a little trouble with his delivery. And just to know that this GM believes so much in you and just has these conversations with you and has built up this relationship, I know that that's important to the players. Anyway, I just felt like that was interesting and significant.
And I think that leads to what one of the things I wanted to talk about today was, you're in Arizona, you get to see what's going on now with the team and with the players. And that's the stuff I've missed hearing about, is what's actually happening on the field. And can't say in the clubhouse anymore because you're not allowed in there, but just the sort of observations that you get to see each day, some of which you're able to write about, some of which maybe you can't, or you save for other times. But you've been out watching workouts now for 3 days. What's it like? First of all, what's it like down there? What's the structure and everything like? And what have you seen that people would be interested in hearing about?
So generally, the media in spring training basically has the run of the place almost, and it's a great time. Everyone's relaxed. The guys you're trying to get information from are relaxed, and you get to be almost everywhere, and so you get a lot of stuff. And we're practically on the field. We are on the field, but we're practically like involved in drills because we're so close. And now where we are, and if anyone's been out to spring training, is we are where the fans usually are, because fans are not allowed at spring training workouts. So I get to go around and see all the fields and go up to the fence. And that's what I get to do, mm-hmm. but not be actually on the field. Before I get into, because I wanted to talk about some things I saw in the last couple days that will apply to what is, I think, probably the biggest story going into the season. But first, I want to make sure I don't forget, Ha-Sung Kim is an amazing second baseman. He is really good. Now, I still think that it will be between he and Jake Cronenworth, who is better offensively, will get the bulk of the playing time there, because Jake Cronenworth is pretty good at second base, mm-hmm. too. But Ha-Sung Kim is awesome.
He hasn't even played much there, right?
I haven't seen him play shortstop. Right.
Right.
But I can see like why this guy was thought of so highly as a shortstop. He is really good. Mm-hmm. It does seem like these guys are having a lot of fun. It really does. They seem to be very comfortable, almost like, and I honestly have never covered a playoff baseball team. So, but it almost feels like they know they're good. And you know, there's obviously a lot of guys there who've played for a long time. So that's different. Now I want to talk about something I saw yesterday, and that was Denelson Lamet throwing a lot of sliders in his bullpen. And I think Denelson Lamet might be the key to the season. You know, like if you had to pick one, if we're going to do like a talk radio type of thing where we're going to completely make an overstatement. Denelson Lamet, healthy, takes this from a third or fourth best rotation to, in my opinion, possibly the best rotation. I know the Dodgers are super deep and man, they are really good, but I'm just saying like, I think that Padres with Denelson Lamet healthy are really good. And the way he was throwing the other day, I thought was very encouraging. The way that Chris Paddock, who you could also say, I don't think quite as important. I think Paddock might be more replaceable at this point. Mm-hmm. But that's another huge key to this rotation and how good they are, which is obviously the rotation, a big key to the team's success. Chris Paddock today getting a little swing and miss. And I'll tell you what, he and Joe Musgrove, who, by the way, fantastic today. Joe Musgrove, they weren't throwing to like you and me. The group that was taking live batting practice against Chris Paddock was Manny Machado, Eric Hosmer, and Will Myers. And now I want to make sure, because just to say all this and tweet or to write about a live batting practice and not give context, I don't know that anybody got a hit off either one of those guys. But for the most part, and especially veteran players, this is their first time in the box against 90. 95. Right. This is right. their first time against that kind of spin. All right. No matter what machines they've been going off against, this is, they're up there to see and kind of get their eye level, and they'll take some swings. But that's what's happening. But I'm telling you that Paddock looked really good. And when he passed me on, I said, oh, got some swing and miss. He said, I'm back. Now, anybody surprised by the bravado from the young Texan? No, they're not. Right. Those are two guys that I saw in the last couple of days that I wanted to share, that at least in spring training, and let's be careful about how excited or dejected we get about anything in spring training, but those seem to be encouraging signs, because wouldn't you agree that those two guys are monster for this rotation success?
Well, I do, and I think I do agree that Lamet is even more of a key, because just of how good he was last year, you know, during the regular season, as short as it was. You make 10 starts? I can't remember off the top of my head.
11.
11 starts, okay. If he can make, you know, 28 to mm-hmm. 27 to 31 starts or something like that this year, and then be around at the end of the season, you are more apt to have a chance to win the game with him pitching than if you go to, say, Musgrove or Paddock, who would be next up, You know, if you have a top three of Snell and Darvish and Lamet, that's a pretty strong three right there. I'm refusing to get caught up in anything related, probably to either one of those guys for different reasons. But Lamet, I'm thinking we need to see him pitch every 5 days, you know, in the spring.
For 15, 16 starts.
Exactly. I was going to say just to get through April, and where he's going to start, say, 5 or 6 times in April, and to see where he is at that point. Mm-hmm. And not even so much where he is from a results standpoint, because if he's healthy, he's going to be getting results. Mm-hmm. But where he is from a physical standpoint, and how do things hold up pitching every 5 or 6 days, whatever it works out to be, because that's the part that's always in the back of your head with him. I think Paddock is more of a physical type thing, where if he's got things back together and he gets things to where he was a couple of years ago, he could be really good for a long period of time. You know, you're not going to worry the same about him. You worry about him because he's a pitcher and things happen to pitchers, but not in the same respect as Lamet, because Lamet's elbow just seems like it's at any moment what's going to happen to it, and you're kind of holding your breath all along. So I really am not going to get carried away. It is encouraging that he's already throwing sliders. Again, it's just you're just going to have to go start by start, month by month with him, and see how he looks, and just hope that each time he's able to say, yeah, I can take the ball. It's my turn. I'm ready to go out there and pitch well.
And I think that that's a big thing. Denelson Lamet, which is why it was so significant that he pulled himself from that game and decided, you know, basically Denelson Lamet was the driver and that he wasn't pitching in the postseason and that he didn't feel right, because there really was no diagnosis of like, oh, man, you got a torn UCL. Sorry, I was thinking about your alma mater for a second there. You got a torn UCL. And it wasn't like that. It was that Denelson Lamet has had Tommy John surgery before. He knew he needed to shut it down. And why that's significant is Denelson Lamet's going to go out there and pitch with no arm. That guy is a bulldog. And I mean, you saw that we had the graphic up there. I've got Denelson Lamet as number three starter. If he's healthy, Denelson Lamet could be the ace of this staff. There's not any question whatsoever, but an ace of a staff goes 27 to 31. And that's this year. An ace of a staff goes 31 to 33. But this year, you get 27 starts out of these guys. I think that's a good year, because they're going to have to be careful, because they're going from, you know, 11 starts to trying to go to 30. Everyone's going from 60 games to 162. So, that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch throughout the season as well. Before we go, Jay, I wanted to talk about, and it's not to the point where we can write about it or anything, and I'll still be surprised if it happens, but seeing AJ Preller on the phone still a lot, you know, it got me to thinking, you know, like, dude, put the phone down. What have you done? Everything you need to do. But my understanding is he's working on things, and he's still interested in adding Josh Hader to the bullpen. Again, I don't know that that's going to happen, but the fact that he got Keone Kella, who looks real good, by the way, the fact that Mark Melanson's here, Pierce Johnson, by the way, who last year kept getting better and better and better and more high leverage. I'm sorry. I mean, I've only seen him in bullpens, but he's up to like 97. He's only like 92 when he went to Japan. He is really good. You got Emilio Pagan, Drew Pomeranz, but evidently AJ Preller's not satisfied. So huge shock.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say put down the phone. What else are you going to do? I guess the bullpen would be the one.
Yes.
The one spot that you would point to more than anything else. Maybe the last guy on the bench, just because you don't know where some of those guys fall in. You know, Matea, Onya, O'Grady, those type of guys. But certainly more important, if there's going to be one spot that they need to fill. Even though I think we went through last week like 15 or 16 guys, you know, for 8 or 9 bullpen spots. If they got one more sort of, you know, lights out type guy, and Hader was a little bit off last year compared to his previous couple of years, but still for the most part had pretty good numbers. So again, it comes down to anything else. What maybe there was the text right there that they just got him. Hearing your
no,
your,
that wasn't the text sound, but oh, but I okay. definitely kept it on because of stuff like that.
Because you never know.
That's why I keep the phone on, and I'm getting old where I can't, you know, the vibration, it doesn't really work.
So anyway. We'll see what happens. I mean, if it happens, it happens. You always have to weigh it against, you know, what is the cost for something like that. I did look. He's under control for 3 more years. I think this was his first arbitration eligible year.
Fits in the model, then.
Yeah. You know? So that it fits into that window and everything.
But, all right. I'm writing about Eric Hosmer for tomorrow, not to get too technical, but some of the changes that he made with his mechanics. Oh, sorry. He's left-handed. he's with his mechanics that allowed him to get the ball in the air more last year. And I mean, he got the ball in the air a lot more, which you could say wasn't hard to do because he would put it on the ground almost more than anyone. But he was very, very, very much like the Eric Hosmer that the Padres are paying for last year in a short sample. So right. That's big going into this season, but that's what I'm going to be doing as soon as we hang up here, Jay.
All right. Looking forward to that. I know we've got a Machado story coming. He's supposed to talk in a couple days and much more to come. So I hope everybody continues to read the paper, read the website, subscribe to Kevin's newsletter, join us here, all that sort of thing. Kevin, go answer your phone.
We'll talk to you in a bit.
We'll talk to everybody later. Bye-bye. We'll see what happens. I mean, if it happens, it happens. You always have to weigh it against, you know, what is the cost for something like that. I did look. He's under control for 3 more years. I think this was his first arbitration eligible year.
Fits into the model then.
Yeah. You know? So that it fits into that window and everything.
But, all right. I'm writing about Eric Hosmer for tomorrow, not to get too technical, but some of the changes that he made with his mechanics. Oh, sorry, he's left-handed. he's with his mechanics that allowed him to get the ball in the air more last year. And I mean, he got the ball in the air a lot more, which you could say wasn't hard to do because he would put it on the ground almost more than anyone. But he was very, very, very much like the Eric Hosmer that the Padres are paying for last year in a short sample. So That's big going into this season, but that's what I'm going to be doing as soon as we hang up here, Jay.
All right. Looking forward to that. I know we've got a Machado story coming. He's supposed to talk in a couple days much more to come. So I hope everybody continues to read the paper, read the website, subscribe to Kevin's newsletter, join us here, all that sort of thing. Kevin, go answer your phone.
We'll talk to you in a bit.
We'll talk to everybody later. Bye-bye.